listening to DWB Podcast. I am Joey Reckless, your host. We're going to review AEW Dynamite and, of course, NXT. We're going to, of course, start off with AEW since it is the fresher of the shows. You could always skip the latter half of the podcast if you don't want to hear about NXT. Hangman Page taking on Brian Cage tonight. It was a really, really solid matchup in which Brian Cage dominated most of the matchup and surprisingly won. Now, let's get this out of the way. Brian Cage definitely looks like he's added on to his midsection. I don't know if maybe it's because he hasn't been wrestling lately or what have you, but it was very noticeable. He was a little bit more winded than I recall him in past matches. So they definitely need to make a more of a priority of having Brian Cage at least appear on AEW Dark or have longer matches so that he can keep his cardio up. But, you know, I'm kind of confused about this result, to be frank. I kind of thought maybe we were building Hangman Page up for Kenny. That was the whole reason for the undefeated streak, is that I thought they were building him for Kenny. And it seems like he went on that winning streak simply to try to give Brian Cage the rub. It's a weird choice, you know. I mean, I can't criticize it. I'm just a little confused as to what we're doing here now. I mean, it kind of seemed like it was really going in one direction. And, I mean, he still has a terrific record. He could still be going for, like, the AEW world title. But, you know, that undefeated streak would have given him a lot of credibility. It would have seemed, like, inevitable to go up against Kenny Omega. Could have done a storyline where Kenny Omega's dodging him. And, like, to an extent, Adam Page was having some doubts about wrestling Omega because of their past and stuff like that. And, like, he would be moody with, like, Dark Order because it reminds him of the last faction he was a part of and all that stuff. Could have done a really good storyline. I'm not saying they're moving away from that, but I'm saying that it was a puzzling choice. I mean, yeah, Brian Cage needed something like this to kind of be viewed in a different way. But see, what worries me is they have no follow through in AEW right now. Jay Cargill had a terrific match that was highly rated. Her and Red Velvet tore the house down, and now she's back to doing just promos. Britt Baker had one of the better female matches on AEW television and has been ever since not wrestling. Not on Dynamite. Not where she needs to be. So, like, I just feel like AEW has so many people, they can't possibly follow up on everybody. And so I don't trust them to use this win for Cage to put, like, the rocket booster on his back and push him to somewhere. And where is he going to go exactly? I mean, is he going to go back after the TNT title? No. He's not going to go for the world. So, like, where could he really go? And if the champion was still Moxley, this would make sense, you know, because he's still technically a heel. This is an odd choice. But, you know, it was a good match. I want to see, like, what they do in the forthcoming weeks. If they don't do anything with Ryan Cage after giving him a victory like this, like, then the loss for Adam Page is just puzzling. And in my view, at that point, it would be viewed more negatively. So it's a wait-and-see approach here. Young Bucks promo. Young Bucks versus the Seidels. Young Bucks win. It was okay. You know, it was all right. Wasn't to the standard of the Young Bucks matches in the past couple weeks. I do like the more character-driven approach now. Matt in particular is really good at being a heel. Sometimes he has a habit of going a little too over the top, but I really like it. He is, like, very annoying in the role and stuff like that. So I think that's really awesome. But I felt like this match was missing a lot. And it was perfectly solid, but it wasn't what you expect the tag team championship match to be on Dynamite. So, you know, but not bad. We got another Jake Cargill promo. At this point, feels awful lot like they don't know what to do with her again. This whole thing is just weird, man. Like, We have all kinds of time on TV. Why can there only be one female match exactly? I don't understand it. Like, poor Britt Baker and Jade Cargill made super big impacts and now are just reduced to cutting promos every week. Ugh. I know, like, we're living in a world where people don't like to criticize AEW, but like, people got to start waking up here. Got to start criticizing AEW. Like, this makes no sense. Like, sometimes you just got to retire some characters that were, like, really important in Once Upon a Time. That's a duh. And go with the character that's catching wind or fire or whatever have you. Like, we should have been having Britt Baker on every week up against somebody, beating somebody on Dynamite, and then inevitably have her beat Sheeta and have her on every week. That's clearly where we need to go here. Why they decided to do this, in my mind, they pissed away all the momentum that they had with that match. It's gone. They missed out on their opportunity. It was fumbled. Orange versus Penta. Penta comes out a weird new ring attire. I didn't like it. Well, entrance attire, technically. I didn't like it. It was dumb. And despite, you know, some interference from his manager, Orange Cassidy won. I mean, I was fine with it. It didn't bother me. I guess, like, if I was going to criticize anything, it kind of feels like Penta is on TV most weeks, which is an improvement, but isn't necessarily winning more than he's losing. Kind of feels like he's being booked where he'll win a couple weeks, lose a couple weeks, win a couple weeks, lose a couple weeks. Really can't build up momentum for his new heel persona that way. And would it really have hurt Orange Cassidy to lose this matchup? No. If anything, that would have made it mean more. I feel like I didn't really understand why Orange won this matchup. Britt Baker promo. She's going to wrestle next week. Is about the only thing we learned from this promo. At this point, no offense, Britt, but you're kind of phoning the promos in, and I get it. They probably had you shoot a bunch of these back to back to back, but it's really hard for me as a fan to buy into these promos. They were really good for a couple weeks, but this last one kind of felt like it was phoned in a bit. Didn't really do much for me. We need her back in the ring and back having matches. Pinnacle versus the Inner Circle parlay. It was just basically them giving one final chance to kind of cut promos on each other and go shoot, brother. It was okay. It wasn't nearly as effective as some of the stuff they've done in the past. But I'm really excited to see the match. I just felt like this segment felt a little too samey from some of the other segments. I don't feel like it accomplished enough. Didn't add any heat. It just more was like people trying to get over and look like stars in against somebody else. I don't really dig that. Kingston came out. This segment was weird. He was supposed to wrestle Nakazawa. And, you know, Nakazawa's doing some weird thing. And Kingston started saying, hey, man, I'm not going to do sports entertainment. I'm here to wrestle, blah, 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 blah. You know, and then, you know, Nakazawa attacks him. Kingston eventually, like, beats him down. It was weird. Eventually, you know, Hangman is going to get his ankle broken because, you know, Moxley comes out and throws him into the ring. And Don Callis begs him not to, and he begs for a match, and so Don Callis agrees. This segment was a miss for me as well. I know that they had to get there, but I wish they would have went a different way to get here. This felt forced. This didn't feel like it fit any of the characters. Because really, like, would Omega's character really care if Nakazawa got his ankle broken? No. Like, he would say he's his friend, right? But he's just a peon. Like, would he really care? No. A heel would just be like, go ahead, break it. I don't care. Still ain't getting a match. it was like, when they break it, they'll be like, well, now what are you going to do? Now I'm definitely not going to give it to you. You know, like, that's kind of feels like the character Omega would is, and I just didn't believe that he would give a crap about a peon like Nagasawa. But whatever. Taz backstage talking about, you know, Christian comes in, talks, and brings out a good, really good point that he thinks Taz is jealous about, that he was never able to come back to the ring when Christian was. I mean, it, you know, it's one of those things where it's believable enough that, like, it has, like, it's believable, but it's probably not necessarily true. You know, I mean, I'm sure Taz wished he would have come back, but I think he's probably made his peace with that a long time ago. But, like, that it would be, it's a believable reasoning for Taz to kind of circle the wagon on Sting, circle the wagon on Christian. It really does give his character a lot of, like, logical reason to be the way he is. I like that part about it. Statlander taking on Penelope Ford. They tried. They did try. I liked what I saw of Statlander the last match. I just felt like this match was fairly average. I don't really think Penelope Ford has much to offer in the ring. Pretty girl, but, like, I'm sorry, that just doesn't really do much for me. I like ring work. Statlander has something. You know, I'm not quite sure what it is, but she just feels like a star. She feels big. You know, she's much taller than Penelope. She seems lanky. You know, it's just one of those things of, like, after an injury like that to a female, can she ever really go the same way? I don't know. I don't know. Like, she's still wearing the knee brace, you know. Kind of feels like she's probably going to have to adjust her style, kind of like Stone Cold did. And she's never going to quite be the way she was. And I'm not saying that's bad, but I need to see more matches. I need to see what she's capable of before I really make up my mind about, like, her in-ring. I would also like to see some more character work. Like, she's somebody that really needs to disappear off of TV and do some promos, like Jay Cargill or Britt Baker. I would like to see, like, what her character really is more. I would like to see her interact with the best friends a little more. I feel like that could be interesting. And Statlander won. It was not a great match, but it wasn't bad either. And he had QT, Camarado, and Silo taking on Billy Gunn, Johnson, and Dustin. By and large, Silo, I feel the worst for, because kind of was the sacrificial lamb to work all the heat. And basically, Camarado was basically the bull in the china shop that looked dominant, that nobody could really stop. This match didn't really accomplish much. Because you would have liked, the factory to come out and dominate. That would have been interesting. That didn't quite happen. And there wasn't necessarily the good guys getting their comeuppance quite yet. So that wasn't interesting. And it wasn't a good, like, fast-paced match where they all show, like, what they could do. It was more of, like, kind of like a little bit of a showcase for Camarado and Silo kind of feeding for the baby faces every once in a while. And kind of like that was kind of what the match was. Eventually the heels win because Anthony Ogogo hits, like, pretty much everybody with his fist and they win. Well, the Gun Club comes out, attacks the factory. And QT starts running away, runs up the ramp to go back to the bus. And you can see Cody Rhodes clearly in the window to the bus door. But we got to pretend like we don't see him for like a half a second. But then Tony kind of realizes it's just too obvious. So he kind of says, wait a minute. There's somebody in there. I'm like, clearly we know who it is. And, like, he opens the door, and there's Cody beating him up, and eventually we work our way to the top of the bus for some reason. Why? I don't know, but we do. and Cody Rhodes puts on a figure four. QT taps again. We are going to get a match between these two groups next week as well. I admire their persistence on forcing the storyline down people's throats. And I admire that, you know, they at least have some ring gear and stuff like that to try to make them feel more like a team. But I would love to know if they drop another couple hundred thousand viewers when QT is on screen. Because they keep doing that, and they keep stubbornly sticking to it, they're going to kill a lot of the support that they've gained post-NXT moving. I mean, the first episode was 1.7 million or something like that. This week, it was closer to 1.2. Last week is closer to 1.1, 1.2, depending on who you believe. This week, I could believe that it would be back at a million, maybe a little bit over. And if they keep insisting on some of their booking choices, I could see it dipping right back below under a million again. That's just me. I mean, they're making a lot of booking choices that are just screwy. Kip is backstage. He finds Miro. Miro beats him up. I'm finally celebrating. Like, finally we can. And then he hugs him and says that he forgives him. So I guess this isn't over yet. Very annoying. Very annoying. I feel like now Tony Khan's actively like trolling people who want to see Miro just beat up Kip and move on. Because, I mean, he did it exactly what everybody wanted him to do, but then he leaned over and hugged him and said he forgave him. So does that mean they're still together? Or he just kind of feels bad about it? I don't know. It was clear. Can we, like, get to, like, Miro being in ring and doing things? Because, like, these backstage segments, again, several weeks in a row, cutting promos. This time he got physical but wasn't in the ring. Tony Khan's got to fire some people, dude. He's got to make room for people. He's got to. I'm sorry. Like, there's just too many people who are not getting TV time that deserve TV time in matches. I mean, promos, like, once a week, you know, once every once in a while would be fine. Like, if it was, like, one promo out of every, like, 2 weeks, okay. But, like, a promo for 3 weeks and then a match, the promo for 3 weeks and a match, that's just not it. I mean, you're staying on TV, but you're not doing anything constructive, really. You're just kind of spinning your tires there. And then we had our main event, 10 taking on Darby. This match, it's probably the worst match Darby's had as TNT champion when he's decided he's going to be defending his championship. Every week. I mean, I'm sure Ten's a very talented individual. I just didn't like it. I don't care about the character at all. I didn't think, like, he brought anything to the table that really made me interested. I don't think his style really lets Darby necessarily shine particularly well either. This was a miss for me, and overall, this is probably the worst AEW Dynamite episode I've ever seen. I didn't like very much of it. I'm sorry to be negative. I try to lean however I actually feel. But, you know, if I don't know how to feel, I try to be somewhere in the middle or more positive. But this episode just didn't do a lot for me. Like, I don't really like the direction we're going with some of the decisions. I don't feel like they're properly following up stuff that really matters. I don't really know where we are with a lot of the storylines. Like, we've clearly defined that the Young Bucks and Omega are aligned. That's no longer a storyline. But what's that mean for Moxley and Kingston? We're still unsure about, because they're still kind of messing around with them, as you saw tonight. We're definitely going to get a match coming up between the Inner Circle and the Pinnacle, but that's clearly not for the pay-per-view. And the only thing that looks like it might be a story is after Darby won, Paige and Scorpio attack Darby and Sting. So that means Scorpio's back in the picture now. And Archer had to run those two off to save Darby and Sting. What's going on with the Archer and Sting thing? What happened to the Brian Cage and Taz tension thing? There's a lot of stories here. What about the promise from Hardy that he was going to kill the Dark Order? Like I said, May's coming up, and I don't feel like they've really picked too many clear directions to go. And all this time of TV to really define really must-see matches. And it feels more like they're trying to frantically build towards this Blood and Guts special episode than they are, you know, Double or Nothing. Which is fine, but it kind of turns me off when you have to hurry up and to book in a panic. Anyways, that's my thoughts on AEW. Thumbs down. So let's move to NXT. I liked it a lot better. There's a lot of stuff on NXT. You had Dakota Kai taking on Mercedes. This was a really good matchup, which was ruined because Raquel interfered, and therefore Mercedes won by DQ. So they're basically setting up the story for Raquel Welch to take on Mercedes Martinez for the for the WWE Women's Championship. Shotzi and Moon are backstage. They have flowers. Frankie reveals that the flowers are from Dexter Lumis. I was really confused by that. And then they start kind of bickering over how grossed out they are that Dexter thinks that they're cute. Grimes is in a jewelry store trying to buy really expensive jewelry. This is a recurring theme throughout the episode. Grizzled Young Veterans promo. It wasn't bad. I thought that they went out there and, you know, at least were different, something different. And I like the fact that they chose, like, not American-style suits. They looked obnoxious. They looked British, which they are. Thatcher and Tommaso Ciampa come out and basically say that they're going to embarrass him or whatever. And eventually they kind of beat him up a little bit and the Grizzly Young Veterans run off. Drake and Killian have a very interesting promo backstage. I like this. Drake is pointing out that Killian's been kind of showing signs that he might be going heel and to join Imperium, and that he's been around wrestling long enough to know that, you know, it's coming. And he starts explaining all these different ways that Killian's going to turn on him and, you know, betray him. And, like, Killian's just looking at him like he's crazy. I like this bit. I like the fact that we're going to lean into, like, what, you know, like the standard kind of issue things that happen sometimes when we're doing a story like this. I like the fact of kind of winking and nodding at the fact that that's usually how it plays out. And it doesn't pay off if he actually does it. It only pays off if he doesn't actually do it, but Drake does it instead. You know, or nothing happens, right? Like, eventually he realizes he's just being paranoid. I don't think they're going to do that because I don't think that's enough of, like, a oomph. Because that's, like, way too subtle for wrestling. I think what they would have to do for people to, like, really like this storyline from, like, a wrestling viewpoint is Drake would have to be the one that turns on Killian. You know what I mean? Just out of just pure anxiety and stuff like that. Like, and make him, like, kind of like a crazy guy. I like that idea. I thought this was, like, a really entertaining promo. Then we got this weird thing where they did, like, the people who are associated with that crazy witch lady who just sits on the throne and stares while that Xi is in the ring kicking the crap out of people. And that weird, creepy guy who stands there as a bodyguard to the witch. Like, they're clearly promoing somebody coming because they, like, put, like, a font up. But, like, it wasn't clear because the one lady that wrestles spoke the entire promo in her language, and nobody translated what she said, so I didn't understand the point of this. It was weird. I didn't like it. Go away. I mean, if you're going to speak in another language, it's fine. But can we at least get somebody to tell us what was said, please? Like, so I'm not completely lost. I appreciate it. And then we got a weird Swerve promo where he's in some kind of studio with this rap beat, you know, kind of underneath his promo. I'm not sure if it was supposed to be coming from the studio or what. It was weird. I didn't know what to make of this. Is this been a part of his character since he's been in NXT? Not from what I've seen. Like, I mean, but feels a little racist. Feels a little racist to make the black guy be hanging out in a studio, you know, because it's clearly like kind of like a rap thing, because the beat is kind of vaguely like a rap beat. Like, it'd be different if there was like a, you know, guitar or something like that, but it was like just a I don't know if I'm supposed to, I don't know what I'm supposed to think here. I don't get why it had to be there. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was something different. But really, the promo's just there so Swerve could say, basically, we're going to have a Falls Count Anywhere match between him and Leon Ruff. I mean, that's really what the promo was about. I was just thrown off by everything surrounding those words. And there was a lot surrounding those words that just distracted me from what should have been a fairly simple promo. Let's do a Falls Count Anywhere match, because I'm gonna end you. I don't want there to be a disqualification, because I'm going to do something so bad to you that if there was a regular match, I'd be DQ'd, and I don't want to give you that kind of an out. I not only want to end you, I then want to beat you in the match. 1, 2, 3. That makes sense, but like, it wasn't really delivered that way. Then we got a Toni Storm promo. Calls herself a legend. She wrestles a lady named Zeta Premier? Primer? I wasn't really sure. They just kind of flashed real quick, and I think they only referred to her as Zeta like 3 times. I don't think they ever really said her last name. I'm sorry, it just passed by me. Basically, the story was that she was really not much of a threat to Tony until like Tony kind of got distracted when Zoe came out, and then Zeta hit a very botched shooting star press for the win. She almost did the same thing Brock Lesnar did, where, you know, she kind of came down at a funky angle and didn't really hit Toni Storm sound. But I guess that was a finish, so we got to go home. It was bad. Not ideal for your, you know, like one of your first TV appearances to botch like your finish. Not good. And the Toni Storm and Zoe storyline continues, which is good. Then we got like a weird little segment here of LA Knight coming across. You know, this could be like a really good like heel character for him to play, because he's got a lot of charisma and stuff like that. Just this obnoxious guy that insists that a girl is clearly interested in him when he's not. And they could kind of lean into some of that Me Too vibes and stuff like that, and kind of like be come across as like a real creep, a guy who thinks he's so good looking that why would a girl not be interested? Clearly they are. And kind of just, I think that might be good, but they kind of, you know, the thing you worry about is WWE has a habit of overdoing some stuff. Like, they might kind of be a little tempted to go overboard with that. But I think there's something here. There's something about establishing him as a bit of a creep. In addition that he can work really well and he could talk awesome on the microphone. Like, would maybe help kind of give him his character something to kind of sink his teeth into. And then we got Ever-Rise, who just disappeared from TV and then just randomly appeared. And I guess we're supposed to, like, know that WWE hates these two because they kill ratings, because basically the interviewer never asked him a question. They point out that she didn't ask him a question, and she basically said, I wasn't intending to ask you a question. So like, we're treating these guys as jobbers now, which isn't great because you're in developmental. If we're gonna kind of lose faith in a group of people, can we just fire them instead of just keeping them and then just making fun of them? Seems like a waste of money. Like, if you're feeling that way about an act, I would just fire them, move on, come to a different act, and try to find something else. Why would you keep somebody around that you have lost hope into, make them eat a bunch of crap? Like, this is the stuff that WWE does that kind of, like, indicates more of, like, a mental health thing with, like, the people who are in power. Like, every business that I know of would just fire the person if they really felt like they weren't doing what they were supposed to be doing, right? Very few places would be like, you know what? I'm going to keep this guy around. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to make his life miserable. I'm going to make him look like an absolute joke. And every moment of a waking dream, I'm going to kill his career more and more and more. And then wonder why, like, we got nothing for him as time goes by. And eventually, like, 3 years from now, we fire him, you know, after WrestleMania. And say, like, well, they never made themselves a star. Never, like, coming to terms with, like, you, like, made up your mind about them after, like, 3 months and then buried them. Like, what? Like, this doesn't help Everrise become something that does draw ratings. See, like, back in the day, if something didn't work, okay, you pull them off of TV and you think about something, some way to kind of, like, okay, what are they missing? Like, what is it that people seem not to like? Try to think of something different that they could do, put them back on TV. For instance, Roddy. You know, he was Roddy. He was associated with Jeff Jarrett. And then we pulled him off of TV, and he became Road Dogg. We used to do this all the time. We would, if something wasn't working, we'd just pull him off of TV, disappear for a while, rework the gimmick, come up with different names, whatever you got to do, and redebut him. And try again under a different scenario. So we're not even doing that now. Now we're just going to just keep the characters and we're just going to, like, make fun of them. Like, this makes, I don't get it, whatever. I mean, it was short, I get it. But, like, it's more of, like, what it indicates that was, like, drove me a little crazy. Austin Theory versus Bronson. I wish I could have liked this match. It's not the guys in the ring's fault, but you knew you were going to get shenanigans, and it wasn't just going to be a clean match. And so I never invested into the match. I just felt like the match was only there for all the shenanigans. And sure enough, that's pretty much what it was. Dexter comes out to try to, like, you know, mack on Indy. Indy seems weirdly not interested all of a sudden. I don't understand that. Where did that come from? And then eventually she gets into the ring, which she should be disqualified for, especially when she doesn't get out. But somehow she's able to stay in the ring because she's not touching anybody. And then, like, she almost gets hurt. So Dexter gets her out of the way, and he eats, like, an elbow to the face, which allows on the other side for the way to try something, but it doesn't work out. Bronson wins. What? That's an awful lot of shenanigans just to get to Bronson winning. Why can't you just have, like, a straight-up match and try as Austin Theory might? He just can't beat him. Like, why? Like, why are we going to do this? Like, it doesn't protect Theory at all. And it just pulls away from the impact of Bronson's win. It doesn't do either guy any favors. Basically, the only purpose of this match is to continue the storyline between Dexter and Indy, which it's a bit of a problem when, like, it's off screen, like you know, kind of like a back screen kind of, like, you know, storyline gets in the way of your wrestling. Like, theoretically, that stuff should be fueling the in-ring stuff, so it's a little bit problematic when it's the reverse. And then the way trick Indy to go after Moon and Shotzi, because they revealed that they got flowers for Dexter. She was just running away from him. Why would she care? Doesn't make any sense. Then we get Dane, Drake taking on Imperium. This was a match that was at least somewhat interesting. And that, like, kind of like Killian's whole thing is he's got a lot of size. Drake has a lot of heart. Between the two, they're in there against a team that was working better, theoretically, together. But, like, just like the weird talents that each of those two bring, they were kind of canceling out the teamwork of Imperium. And then, like, we started getting the secondary story of Wolf doesn't really want to take Killian Dane out. Now, you don't really know if it's because he really wants him to join or if he's sympathetic. He doesn't have the killer instinct to attack him with the chair. And then we got another moment where, you know, it was the inverse, that Killian Dane was going to throw one of the members of Imperium into the stairs and Wolf stood in the way. It was an interesting story. I don't know where it's going, but it was certainly a development in the storyline. And since they didn't like cut a promo or anything like that, it wasn't really clear exactly what Wolf's intentions were or what he was thinking. But it was something intriguing. Imperium did win the match, and so we'll see where this goes. Will Wolf have to answer for that decision? Because the one thing was clear, the other two members of Imperium noticed that he didn't hit him with the chair and were mad at him for not hitting him with the chair. So is his loyalty going to be questioned? We'll have to wait and see. But, you know, I know a lot of people don't like Imperium, but this at least has me... It's more the story of, you know, we were kind of teasing that maybe Killian Dane might be turning, but we might ultimately be teasing that maybe Alexander Wolf might have some sympathy towards Killian, his ex tag team partner, and might end up like going against Imperium, which would be interesting. It's something they don't normally do, and so it would feel like a fresh story. They've done it a few times in the past, but I mean, it's really hard to think of a storyline that wrestling hasn't done before. But you know, if it hasn't been seen in a while, it kind of feels fresh. Then we had Pete Dunne cutting an awesome promo. I know. I'm a mark for Pete Dunne. So maybe I might be biased, but I thought it was really good. And I thought like he was just basically saying, I'm here to dominate and I'm going to go and I'm going to take whatever belt I want. It's just a matter of time. I mean, he said more than that, but he essentially said he could, you know, brought up the possibility of going after pretty much every belt. But, like, I don't know. I just really thought, like, his character and stuff like that was really strong in his promo. He was, coming across as, like, a tough guy heel who just was unlikable. And I thought he pulled it off really, really well. Then we got the payoff of the Grimes segment earlier. He buys a watch. It's a really nice watch. It's supposed to be really expensive. But then, in the camera shot, you see Arbor reach in with clearly a nicer looking watch, and Ted says, that's a nice watch, but not a $1 million watch. And he laughs at Grimes' face, and Grimes gets really, really mad that he wasn't able to buy as nice of a watch as Ted DiBiase could buy. It wasn't too bad. Then we got the Ember Moon and Shotzi gonna wrestle a match against Aleah and Jesse Kamea. I don't know. It doesn't really matter because nothing really happened, because Indy and Candace come out and attack Moon and Shotzi, and we never really get an explanation of what exactly happened, because normally, you know, the heels come out and they attack the baby faces and the match just, you know, eventually starts. I've never seen in my entire life a match that's literally, you know, both teams come out, you know, and they're in the ring, something happens, and we just don't get, like, an announcement of what happened. No DQ, the match is thrown out, they just moved on. Like, it was weird, dude. Like, this is, like, one of those things, like, I know I'm old, I get it, like, it's fine. But, like, back in the day, if they would have done this, like, the ring announcer would have gotten the ring and be like, due to outside interference prior to the match, this match has been thrown out. It will be rescheduled at a later time. Something like that. Like, would have been, like, what they would have done in the past. Just not saying anything, just moving on was, like, weird, and just made my inner old man, like, wrestling fan, like, go, like, apoplectic, like, aneurysm. Then we got an Adam Cole interview by the pool. He's just being obnoxious. Just sitting there talking on the phone, didn't blame the guy who was interviewing him for delaying the interview when clearly it was himself. Then gets mad at the guy towards the end of the thing for the same thing, even though it was him. It was just basically Adam Cole trying to be obnoxious. I don't know if he pulled it off necessarily, but that's what they were going for. And then we got a realization that this whole thing we've seen playing out, it pulls out, it appears to be like on a TV, and it pans down, and Kyle O'Reilly's been watching. End this segment. So, not sure what to make of that. Then we had a trios match, MSK and Kushida taking on Los Elfem. I'm not even going to try it. Not even going to try it, dude. Let's just go with Santos, Wild, and Mendoza. How about that? This was the best match of the night. This felt like something that belonged on AEW. They did not give one single solitary crap about psychology. They pulled out a lot of stuff that I have not seen on WWE TV. Seen a lot on AEW, but this match stood out as very different from like WWE style. I really liked the matchup. It was just a really strong main event. You know, it really was. I mean, everybody kind of shined. Everybody had a moment. And then, like, the heels had, you know, Wesley. They had one of the MSK guys isolated. It was the Wesley, the black guy. They had him isolated. Everybody else has been kind of put out of commission one way or another. One was put through a table. The other one, I missed what happened. And they're doing everything they can to beat him. And he just will not give up. He keeps kicking out, buying time for the inevitable babyface comeback. And they're able to win. I thought that story was really well told. You know, it kind of, dude, I mean, the heels did everything they could to win this matchup. It's just the babyfaces had more heart, which is like a really rare story that is told in WWE anymore. And it was such an old school kind of like rock and roll express kind of story of just like these dastardly heels are going to do everything they can to beat these two. And no matter how hard they try, they keep kicking out. And eventually they actually manage to win the match despite the heels' best effort. I really liked it. You know, there's a lot more to this show positive than AEW. I know I had some complaints and stuff like that, but it's just more of like, you know, I gotta do what I gotta do. If it doesn't make sense to me or you know, whatever, I gotta say so. So, you know, it seems like we're gonna be building towards like Pete being something interesting. Cole and Riley seem to be the ghost of that rivalry seems to have at least been re-raised after that promo. We still have like this whole six-man confusion between Santos, Wild, Mendoza, MSK, and Kushida. What's going to happen there? Definitely looks like Candice LeRae and Indy are still involved with Moon and Shotzi. Bronson still associated with Gargano. Basically, the only thing that I think we're getting that's slightly different is Ciampa and Thatcher potentially going up against the Grizzled Young Veterans and Mercedes and Raquel Gonzalez. Other than that, a lot of the stuff is kind of like redux from the last NXT pay-per-view. And I forgot about Swerve and Ruff. That seems to be continued as well. Should be that big surprise. WWE pretty much has decided that, you know, their event after WrestleMania is largely going to always be like kind of like carryover from the other events. I guess I kind of maybe thought NXT might be a little bit different since they're not officially involved in WrestleMania. They don't really have pay-per-views every month in NXT. They kind of have it like once a quarter. But when NXT can do like these special event like episodes that are kind of like a bridge, a gap between these big pay-per-view shows, I guess you could kind of like do like maybe like a special episode where it's kind of more of like a TV version of an NXT takeover and kind of like pick up some of these feuds that you've been doing for a little bit. That we saw on the Stand and Deliver with a couple fresh matchups here and there. I mean, it's not the worst thing in the world. It's just not fresh, you know. But I think a lot of the stories, even though they're not the freshest, I do think they are adding something to them. And I do think that they are building them in a way where I kind of do want to see them again. I think the only thing that they really haven't built quite to that level is Bronson and Gargano. Everything else, I kind of at least feel like there's some momentum in seeing the match again. I mean, there's still more work to go. I would like to see them do a little bit more, but you know, all in all, you know, as far as rematches are concerned, I think they're not doing too bad of a job of building towards them. And we never know, like, what is Tony Storm and Zoe going to have a match? Like, what was happening with that? You know, that would be technically, since we didn't get to see it because it was on the prelims, maybe that would resurface on the TV show. I'm not sure where they're going. I know they're not building up to another takeover because takeovers, there's a lot of time between the takeovers. But they might be building towards some kind of theme thing. But they do the same thing AEW does. It's weird. You would think they'd want to advertise that thing like weeks out. But they do the same thing AEW does. They seem to wait till the week before to advertise that they're going to do a themed event. It's weird. Like, we kind of knew Blood and Guts was going to happen on AEW, but we didn't know, like, it was going to be a special event called Blood and Guts, and they were going to try to build it other matches up for it. That's kind of what it seems like NXT does, too. Like, they kind of feel like they wait till the last second and be like, hey, guess what? We're doing a themed episode. And you're kind of like, well, like, it would have been a little bit cooler if you would have made that announcement that built the stories that way, instead of building up the stories and then trying to shoehorn a theme in. That's weird, but okay, you know, whatever. But you know, all in all, I definitely thought NXT was a thumbs up. First match is watchable. Last match is really good, and it achieved a lot more. And it helped a lot of the characters more. It felt like they knew how to use people a lot better. It was just a better, well-organized show, in my opinion. Anyways, thank you for listening to DWB Podcast. I am your host, Joey Reckless. Thank you so much for listening to the show. And please keep sharing, liking the podcast, sharing it with your friends and family. I see the numbers growing more and more each week. Thank you so much for supporting the show. I really do appreciate it. Till next time, remember, I too, once upon a time, wanted to punch Carson Daly in the face on TRL. But you gotta admit, we miss seeing music videos on TV. I miss my MTV. Till next time, take care.